You're listening to The Exchange on Siouxland Public Media. And today we have a forum with the candidates for the 4th District congressional seat that covers Northwest Iowa. Today's guests are Republican State Senator Randy Feenstra of Hull and Democrat J.D. Shulton of Sioux City. The forum was recorded earlier this week. First, we hear from each candidate as they introduce themselves. The first voice you'll hear is Randy Feenstra's.
Thanks, KWIT and Mary, for hosting this event. I'm Randy Feenstra. I'm a husband, a father, a common sense conservative Republican. My wonderful wife, Lynette, and I have been married 28 great years, and I have 4 wonderful children. I'm running for Congress because the 4th District needs a proven, effective conservative voice that will deliver. To me, this election is about real results, not campaign rhetoric. I served in the Iowa Senate for 12 years, being assistant majority leader. I helped deliver results for Iowa families, businesses, and the agricultural community. I authored and helped pass the largest income tax cut in state history. I worked to provide assistance for first-time farmers, eliminated the grain bin tax, and passed healthcare plans tailored for rural Iowa. I also helped reduce regulations and oppose liberal schemes like the Green New Deal and government takeover of healthcare that would hurt our families and businesses by busting their budgets and reducing rural healthcare access. In Congress, I'll continue to deliver for families, Main Street businesses, and farm producers. I will work on the Ag Committee to deliver results for the farming community. I'll work on tax reform that builds on the Trump tax cuts, further simplifying our tax code and reducing the burden of our families, our farmers, and our job creators. Most of all, I'll work every day to deliver real results for the 4th District. These aren't campaign promises or rhetoric. These are actual conservative results that I am proud to have been delivered in Iowa, and I'll do the same in Congress. Again, thank you for hosting the event, and I look forward to our discussion.
J.D. Shulton.
Yeah, thank you again for Siouxland Public Media for having us. My name is J.D. Shulton, and I'm a fifth-generation Iowan, first to be raised in town. Come from a long line of farmers and educators. My grandpa, one side of the family, comes from Larchwood. My other side is from a farm outside of Lake Mills. And my one grandpa sold seed and feed. My other grandpa was a farmer. So I like to say one gave away the hats and one wore the hats. My parents met in Mason City. I was born in Ames when we were living in Nevada in 1984. My family moved to Sioux City when my dad got the head baseball job at Morningside College. And this is where I remain today. And so, so much of our campaign is, I mean, you hear grassroots campaigns get thrown around a lot these days, but I literally last cycle got in my car and went from town to town, county to county. And currently we just finished our every town tour, going to all 374 towns in Iowa's 4th congressional district. I drove our campaign RV, Sioux City Sioux, all 7,786 miles. And I didn't hire a pollster. I didn't hire some consultant to tell me what to say. I went out there and listened to people. My campaign doesn't take any corporate PAC money. We are a people-powered movement. And in fact, even our own, the DCCC, the entity that oversees congressional candidates on the Democratic side, we've rejected them in saying that we want this race to be run out of Sioux City, Iowa, and not Washington, D.C. That is our campaign. We're grassroots, and in doing so, we talk every single day about fix, fight, and secure. Fix healthcare, fight for an economy that works for everyone, and secure our democracy from the special interests that are dictating it. And our campaign's all about leveling the playing field and being accessible to the people. And so with that, I'm very excited about being on this forum today.
All right, you know, I'd like to ask both of you, maybe since I'm talking to you now, JD, I'd start with you about the coronavirus and how the coronavirus is being handled, I guess you might say, on the national level, because you're running for a national office.
Right. Well, what we have seen from day one is a lack of leadership. You know, when we have, when this administration decided to push things onto the states, well, we saw what happened here in Sioux City alone. When you go across the river and you have a completely different plan, and then you go up north just a little bit to South Dakota, and they have a completely different plan. And so our head's been on a swivel, especially since June. I mean, months into this, we're still have this one foot in, one foot out approach. And since June, Iowa has actually had more new cases than California. And that's absurd. I mean, it was so bad here not too long ago that just one county in the 4th District had more new cases than the entire country of Canada. And that's hurt our economy. You know, I go, as we went around on this 374 town tour, we talked to so many small businesses that are struggling, and they're not going to make it. And I mean, you look here in Sioux City and you see the chain restaurants are doing okay, but the local restaurants are really struggling. And that is something we need to address. And so what we need to do is have a national plan. It's about testing, making sure we have enough tests, making sure that we can locate and trace where the outbreaks are, making sure we have PPEs. But the biggest issue of what we saw with the federal bailout, or I'm sorry, the federal coronavirus, the initial wave, is that they gave $500 billion immediately to Wall Street. That's money that will never come back to the 4th District. And we see this time and time again. We're bailing out the super wealthy and these huge corporations when working class people are struggling to get by. And this is something that, again, you'll hear me talk a lot about leveling the playing field. And this is something that I am passionate about.
Randy Feenstra.
Well, my thoughts and prayers go out to everyone that has been affected by the virus. I think each family in the 4th District has somebody they know that has got it or has been struggling with it. And, you know, our campaign, when it all happened in early March, that we quickly transitioned and we said, you know, how can we help one another? How can we help? How can we as neighbors work together? And we went out and got groceries. We sent postcards to everybody saying, hey, how can we help? And it was just amazing to see all the responses of helping one another. And to me, that's what this COVID virus really has hit home for me. It's all of us in this together, working together and making difference. It's social distancing. It's being careful for the vulnerable, you know, wearing masks, doing everything we can. You know, I also applaud our governor. You know, our governor has a challenging spot to make sure that we protect and keep people safe and yet keep our economy open. And she has done a fabulous job in that. And even in the 4th District, you know, all our schools are back going. Kids are back back going to school, learning again, playing football, playing volleyball. You know, COVID is a very serious virus, but we also have a situation that we can continue to have our economy open and try to be as normal as possible. However, I look forward to a vaccine, and hopefully 2021 is somewhat back to normal.
All right. Next, I'd like to ask you each about some of the few policy issues that are most important to you. Maybe JD, I'll start with you. What are your most important policy issues?
Like I mentioned in the opener, fix, fight, and secure is what we talked about every single day. Fix healthcare. In this district, costs are skyrocketing, accessibility is shrinking. And part of that is even before COVID, we are a mostly rural district and we see rural hospitals suffering. We got to make sure that they're doing well and are part of the equation. When it comes to fighting for an economy that works for everyone, this is something that is so clear in this district. You know, as I've gone to all 374 towns, you see a lot of these main streets are not what they used to be. And to me, it's about rural revitalization. We have not bounced back since the 2008 economic crisis in this district. And a huge part of that is we see the corporatization of America and just sucking the wealth out of this district. And there's no clearer than exactly what happened here in Sioux City when you have consumers paying the most they ever have for meat. When you have workers at the processing plants getting the same wage as when my family moved here from Nevada in 1984 and working in dangerous conditions early on. And then on the other side, they're squeezing farmers. And so our campaign's building this coalition of consumers, of workers, and of farmers. And then the other thing we talk about all the time is securing our democracy from the special interests that are dictating it. Again, we don't take any corporate PAC money. We are a people-powered movement. And a huge part of this is we're seeing the amount of special interests, whether it's prescription drugs, whether it's these huge multinational agriculture companies that are acting like monopolies, so many industries they create these career politicians create these policies that end up benefiting the people who they give money to. And we got to stop that. We got to stop the revolving door between members of Congress and lobbyists. We got to stop and reform campaign finance reform, because this government needs to get back to of the people, by the people, and for the people. People are sick of these modern campaigns that just bash the other side. We talk about what we're for and not just who we're against. And we stand out that way because almost every other candidate running for federal office in Iowa are exact opposite. Their first ads are always about the other person and stuff like that. And that's wrong. And so that's what our campaign's about. And those are the issues that I learned traveling to all 374 towns.
Thank you. Randy Feenstra, what are your biggest issues?
Yeah, the biggest issue is exactly what the 4th District represents, and that is agriculture. We're second in the nation in agriculture. And you think about being number one or two when it comes to corn and soybeans, cattle, hogs, dairy, eggs, turkeys. We have it all here, and we need an effective voice on the Agricultural Committee. In 2022, that will be the next farm bill, and we have to make sure that we have a seat seat at the table for that farm bill so we can advocate and be a voice for our farming community. It is so vital. It also comes down to promoting ethanol and biofuels to ensure that we can expand those markets and uphold the RFS standard. We also, you think of, we are the breadbasket to the world, meaning that we have to continue to look at expanding trade. I applaud President Trump for drawing a line in the sand with China. And now we're seeing the first phase halfway completed, over $15 billion already being purchased by them. And next generation, we're going to look back and say, that was unbelievable what happened, how we got fair trade back with Trump. The other thing is we have to look at our debt. Right now, our debt is just crushing us. We have $26.8 trillion of debt. In the Iowa legislature, we balance our budget every year. We have a balanced budget, and right now we have about $1 billion in our cash reserves. We're the number one state in the nation for handling COVID and for having cash available. That's what we need at the federal government. Everything goes around making sure that we protect our security based on if we can manage our budget and our debt. And finally, it's about life. My faith tells me that it's so important that we each are here for a purpose and a reason. And that's why I'm pro-life, and I will fight for that.
You know, you mentioned tariffs. I wanted to ask you each about trade. So maybe I'll stick with you right now, Randy. You talk about trade, evening out trade levels with China, the tariff wars we had. There was a lot of concern that this was hurting farmers.
Yeah, so the tariff wars, it was tough, and it absolutely did hurt farmers early on. When President Trump drew a line in the sand and said, you know what, enough's enough. We've been taken advantage of for the last several decades, and we're not going to be taken advantage of anymore. And so tariffs were put on, and now we're starting to see some balanced trade happening. We saw MCA get passed, changing a dramatically new trade deal. All of a sudden, we're seeing new trade deals occur with Taiwan and Japan and multilateral and unilateral trade deals with the Pacific Rim. I mean, these are all things that are blossoming that will help our producers and our agricultural community. That's why I'm so excited to see where we're at and how our future is going to be dramatically changed because of what President Trump has done with trade.
JD, I know you've talked a lot about some of the hardship that went on in rural communities because of the trade situation and the kind of the escalation of the trade wars. Could you talk a little bit about that?
Absolutely. But I would like to first say that even before the trade wars, we've had decades of market consolidation, and that's something I want to get into before we end here tonight. But the when we talk about the trade wars, for most of the last 3 years, we have borrowed money from China to pay our farmers to not sell their products to China. And you look at why we held China accountable. And again, I will not fault Trump for going after China, but the way he did it is with no leverage has really hurt us and made our farmers in the 4th District be political pawns. Competitive subsidies, intellectual property theft, and currency manipulation. And none of those things are being addressed anymore. And so we're approaching the end of year one with the phase one deal, And we are, China's billions of dollars behind. And even if they caught up all the way to what they agreed upon, it only brings us up to about the level where we were before this all even started. And you look at even August, the trade deficit in the United States was an all-time record, and that's $83 billion. And so we are going in the wrong direction here. And so this is about our markets that our farmers for decades have tried to get into, and then all of a sudden it's disrupted. And now China is changing the global supply chain. They're going down to Brazil and South America to get a lot more soybeans from down there. And you got to wonder who's down there selling beans from South America to China. It's the same multinational corporations, these monopolies that are also selling from Iowa. And so the Iowa farmer, we have to figure out their role in all of this. I think DC has not figured out globalization as it affects the working class. And that's one of the biggest things that leads into income inequality. And nowhere is that more clear than Iowa farmers and what is their role to play. And so what I say in my campaign suggests is it doesn't matter if you're hundreds of acres or thousands of acres, you should have a chance to succeed.
Randy, do you have something you'd like to say about the whole issue of globalization and fair trade?
Just sort of what we talked about, you know, how important trade is globally and how we've been successful with MCA and how we are working with the Pacific Rim countries on expanding trade. You know, you think of, as I said, we are the breadbasket to the world when it comes to corn and soybeans and cattle and hogs and eggs. All these things go, we export all these things. And it's in essence, it's very personal to me. My in-laws, we have hogs and cattle and corn and soybeans, and it affects us. And I see it every day. I see it on my, whether myself or my kids are on the farm. It's so important that we have markets. It's not only through corn and soybean, it's also ethanol and biodiesel. I mean, these are another great opportunities for our producers, and that can also be exported. I think of the RFS, if we could expand the billions of gallons, 15 billion gallons right now, if we could push that up to 20 billion gallons, and if we could expand from E10 to have people use E15. I did this in the Iowa legislature when we came back on June 3rd. I passed the bill saying instead of having E10, let's push it to E15. So now we're seeing more and more convenience stores selling E15. Again, more consumption helps our farming community, and globally, this is the next thing. It's the new green energy that we can all push.
You know, JD, it seems like in the last year or so, there've been issues with ethanol producers. Some of them had to shut down for a little while, then they were back up, and there's also been a lot of talk about this, about the Green New Deal and moving to other energy sources. And I know you discussed these issues in your campaign platform.
Yeah. So first, I'll address the Green New Deal part of this. This is something that I've said from the very beginning, I don't support. And here's the reason why, is that when it was launched, first, it's a non-binding resolution. And so it's not a bill, it's not anything. But secondly, when it was released, it didn't include farmers, it didn't include rural communities. So to me, that's a non-starter. And I've mentioned this in several forums now, and Randy still runs his ad about it. And I told him that it's pretty disgraceful to run ads when it's a clear lie. And I've told him repeatedly that I don't support it. So there's that. But when it comes to the RFS and what this administration has done, and this is not just in the last year, this has been a couple years now, they've passed 85 waivers. And that has hurt, that's cost us 4 billion gallons of ethanol. And so that equates to 12 million acres of corn. And so right now, corn prices have gone up a little bit recently, but it's about where cost of production is. And so farmers are doing everything right, but struggling to make cost of production because this administration has just flooded the market and we have too much grain in the bin. And you know, one of the things that when they talked about the gap waivers and now some of the gap waivers, not all of them, but some of them. And so there was some relief by the renewable fuel industry in saying, oh, that's great. But the equivalent is if I burnt half of Sioux City down and threatened to burn the other half down, but don't, I shouldn't be applauded for that. you know, and that's where we're at. I've on our 374 town tour, I've stopped at a bunch of ethanol plants and I've all asked them the same thing. Where do you see yourself in 10 years, 20 years? Nobody can say. They don't even know where they're at in 2 years. We've had 150 plants either gone idle or have lost production or shrunk their production because of this administration. And so you look at some of the things that we're proposing, more pumps, absolutely, across the nation in gas stations. And then the other part of it too is I've met with the California Air Resource Board. And so that is an entity called CARB. And they have, they predict or they dictate what happens in fuel supply and fuel transportational fuels in California. And with the nation, with California having the nation's about 1/5, 1/6 of the GDP, they dictate how things are going almost as much as policies out in DC. And what their president said is we don't get to carbon neutral or decarbonize as a nation without renewable fuels. That is our direction. And so my campaign's pushing for a low carbon fuel standard so we can have a baseline and have more demand. And that's the direction that I feel we should go.
You're listening to The Exchange. I'm Mary Hartnett, and we are listening to a taped forum with the 4th District Congressional candidates, Republican Randy Feenstra and Democrat J.D. Scholten. Support for The Exchange comes from Gregory Giles, investment advisor representative with Legacy Financial LLC in Sioux City, serving the financial planning and investment needs of clients since 2004. Information about Legacy Financial and Greg Giles is available at legacyfinancialllc.com. Financial planning and advisory services offered through RDA Financial Network.
Yeah, I'd like to move now to taxes and tax cuts and ask Randy Feenstra, because Randy, you were so instrumental in the tax cuts in the state of Iowa. If you were in Congress and say President Trump would still be in office, it looks like we would see taxes cut more on the national level. Is that, I'm assuming that's something you'd be in favor of, Randy?
Absolutely. You know, I applaud what occurred in 2017 when President Trump did the tax cuts, because it helped every farmer, it helped every family, it helped every business. And now we hear from the other side that they want to roll those back. They want to get rid of them. I think Biden said, the first thing I do when I get elected, I'm going to get rid of all those tax cuts. You know what a tax cut does? It puts money back in people's pockets. It allows them to make decisions. And that's how you grow an economy. And that's what I did in the Iowa legislature. I authored and passed the largest income tax reduction in the state of Iowa. And look what it's done. Today, we sit on $1 billion in our cash reserves because our economy has grown and it has flourished. It has been noted that we are the number one state in the nation for taking on COVID and having our fiscal house in order. That's all because we gave money back to the people and made a difference, that they can spend the money and they can help grow the economy and they can spend the money on what they want instead of giving it to big government.
Right, J.D. Scholten.
Yeah, so what we saw with the 27 tax bill, well, let's first, I know Senator Feenstra talked about the deficit. Well, what added to $2 trillion of the deficit was the 2017 tax bill. It has shipped, made it easier for companies to ship jobs overseas. And when we talk about farmers, it actually, the exemption from small corporations, which a lot of farmers are in, that exemption was taken away, and it has hurt smaller farmers. And so this tax bill has just been a disaster. You know, it allowed for middle-class tax breaks until 2024, but the corporate tax breaks are permanent. And it just shows what's the best interest of working-class people. And this just has, again, attributed greatly to income inequality. And nowhere is it more clear then 91 Fortune 500 companies paid $0 in taxes, including Amazon right now, which is making $1 billion. And what could we do with just a fair tax from these corporations? We could pay for health insurance. We could pay for infrastructure programs. We could pay for public schooling. We could pay for tests for every single American to get over this darn coronavirus. And it just, what we need to do is value work. And that is what's missing. When we elect career politicians, when we elect the way that we run campaigns, really the seesaw, I guess, what it is, it allows for wealthy people more than working class people. And that's what my campaign is trying to fight the status quo, because the system is meant for wealthy people to go to Congress, because you got to raise a bunch of money. You got to know a lot of people. We're trying to break the status quo. We're trying to level the playing field, because too many of my neighbors and too many people that we've met along all 374 towns in this district are getting left behind. And we need a tax system that values the dignity of work.
And next, I'd like to ask, I'll start with Randy Feenstra about healthcare. A lot of worries about healthcare right now, concerns about where it's going to go on the national level. There are talks about moving to, some people would like to see a universal system, others would like to see more health savings accounts and those kinds of things. Randy, what would you like to see happen?
Well, I was a overseer of an insurance division at a bank when Obamacare was introduced and put into place. And it pained me to sit across from a family or a business person or a farmer and tell them that their premium was going from $1,000 to $2,000, and the following year, another $500. And these people would just cry and say, we can't afford paying $24,000 to $30,000 a year in healthcare costs. And the system's broken. The system's absolutely broken. So we need to change it. We need to make sure that we keep and take care of pre-existing conditions. That's so important. But we also cannot have government take over healthcare. That would separate patients from the doctors and increase costs and close rural hospitals all over Iowa. My plan would be to ensure that we protect Iowans from pre-existing conditions and make sure that we have a free market system and make sure that we understand third-party billing, that that does not get caught up, that people know exactly through transparency what their bill is. I want to make sure folks can purchase insurance across state lines, and that we increase competition to drive down costs. We need to lower pharmaceutical costs and surprise and make sure that patients know exactly what they're paying. All these things can be done, but we never want to deny coverage. We can do this. We are America. We can have a great system, but the last thing we need is government takeover of healthcare.
J.D. Shelton.
Yeah, you know, Randy was instrumental in the privatization of Medicaid, which has delayed and denied reimbursements for rural hospitals. And so when we talk about rural hospitals, we have to realize that before COVID, one in four rural hospitals was threatened to be closed. And it's for a lot of that reason. You know, I'm for universal health care. I think it's going to take steps to get there. I think the most logical next step is putting in a public option. You look at the backbone of this district economically, and it's small business and it's farmers. And both of them don't have good options right now when it comes to healthcare, and we got to figure out a solution for that. But if there's one thing this pandemic has really put a spotlight, is that if my neighbor down the street doesn't have healthcare because they can't afford it or their job doesn't offer it, that affects the whole neighborhood. And so this is, we got to figure out solutions when it comes to this. We're already paying as taxpayers and with insurance and co-pays and all that, as per person, more than any other country in the world. And we're not getting a very good bang for our buck. And when I get in my Sioux City Sioux, the campaign RV, and go from town to town to town, almost every gas station has a donation box of someone who just got sick or someone who's in the hospital. We have so many GoFundMes to help pay for these costs, and so many pancake breakfasts and community coming together to try to pay for medical costs. We're the wealthiest nation in the world. We got to figure this out. Every other Western developed country has figured this out. And so some of the other things, we absolutely got to protect pre-existing conditions. There's no doubt about that. We got to not only protect, but expand Social Security and Medicare. And then when it comes to prescription drugs, we got to really get a handle. We were in Hardin County for our Don't Forget About Us tour last fall, where we went in towns of under 1,000 people and had town halls, because that's what our campaign's about, being accessible to the people. And there was a woman there that said it cost her $244 a month for an inhaler, a 30-day prescription. And she told her doctor, I can't afford this anymore. And the doctor said, well, here's one that's $188, but it's less puffs. After a few more months, she said, again, I can't afford it. And then finally, the doctor goes, well, just go up to Canada. That's where we're at. And that's a disgrace. We're too good of a nation to have this sort of care or lack thereof of care. My campaign doesn't take any corporate PAC money. And so when I say that I'm going to go there and fight the pharmaceutical companies to get average Americans be able to pay for it, that's what I mean. And I don't take any money from Big Pharma.
I think next I'd like to ask about immigration. And Randy Feenstra, I know that President Trump, this was a big campaign issue for him last time around, building the wall, having more stringent immigration laws and stringent sort of rules to enter the country, become a citizen. If you were in Congress, what kind of immigration law would you like to see in effect?
Well, first we must secure our borders. We need to know who's coming in and out. That's very paramount. But I would love to expand the H-1B program. We are a nation of immigrants, and we are a nation of laws. We need to have a H-1B program that people can stay here for more than 6 months, that they can stay here and work. And then you think about our ancestors. Our ancestors came across, and they were sponsored by business owners, or they're sponsored by agricultural producers. We need to do the same thing. We have the technology and the ability to do that today, where somebody says, hey, I need 5 or 6 workers or whatever it might be. Okay, go ahead, let's sponsor them and get them involved. These are all things that can be done. We absolutely need to go down the path and continue to expand our economy, and that work that happens by having a stronger workforce. And I'm excited to be a part of that.
Are you in favor of continuing to build the wall on the southern border?
I am. I mean, I think that you have to protect our country. That's where it starts. We are a nation of law, and we have to have border protection.
JD, I know you've talked quite a bit about immigration law and things that you would like to see happen.
Yeah, you know, I actually went down last fall to El Paso. And what we saw is, I mean, the wall is there. But what you see is when somebody crosses the river, the wall doesn't protect them from coming into the nation. Once they cross the halfway point of the river down there, then they're on American soil and the immigration process begins. So the wall isn't actually stopping anybody from coming in. And I mean, you can easily fly over the wall as well. And so, you know, we have to have secure borders. There's no doubt about that. But the reality is, in this district, and this is coming from last cycle when we did our first town hall in Storm Lake, Iowa. And there was a woman who came up to me afterwards, and she said it took 17 years and $17,000 to become an American citizen. And that's sounds like, after talking to people, that's about the average. And that is extremely costly and long. And so we need comprehensive immigration reform. We haven't had it since 1986. The technology is there to improve on figuring out how to improve some of the issues. When we talk about visa programs, we need a visa program that matches our economical needs here in the 4th District. A lot of the visa programs match the coastal needs and their agricultural needs, which are different than ours. And so I would like to see an update version. You know, a couple years ago, I swung by Jefferson's grain elevator during harvest, and they said they needed 39 employees to help with the seasonal harvest, and not one American citizen applied. And this is something that we hear reoccurring going throughout all the districts, and that need for a workforce. And the reality in this district is we're losing a lot of our kids because of lack of opportunity. And so we need that immigrant workforce, there's no doubt. But a couple of other things that we need to have, the DREAM Act, we need to pass that. We made a promise to these kids to no fault of their own. And the thing that doesn't get mentioned nearly enough that I'm trying to raise more awareness, 40,000 veterans have been deported. And that's wrong. These people were promised to become citizens if they join the military, and we have deported them. And that does not look good for the U.S.
Randy, I'd like to ask you next about gun laws, gun control laws. I know that you were very much a proponent of passing the Stand Your Ground law in Iowa. Is that correct?
Yes, it is. Yep. So about gun laws, you know, I'm a pro-Second Amendment person. I believe that our Constitution gives us the right to bear arms. And we've done a lot of great things in the Iowa legislature over the last years. We did Stand Your Ground. We made sure that we expanded the ability to have guns. And I'm against all red flag laws. I believe that our Constitution says that we have the right to carry. So I am very passionate about our gun rights that we have as Americans.
JD, what's your stand on gun laws?
So I think there's this narrative in this nation that it's either the Second Amendment or gun safety. And I think that's a false choice. I think there's a huge overlap. And, you know, I think the biggest issue that I see in this gets back to securing our democracy from the special interest. 98% of Americans are for universal background checks. But the fact that we can't get something like that passed nationally shows a failure of our democracy. And anytime there is a suicide by gun or a murder or any violence with a gun, it hurts the reputation of a responsible gun owner. And I feel that is an area that we need to improve upon.
Well, I feel I need to ask you both, although I know your opinion on this, about abortion rights. JD, can you tell us your stand?
Yeah, well, when we talk about what this role is as being a member of Congress. And, you know, I'm Catholic and I have a personal view on this, but the overall issue is the federal government shouldn't be the person or be, it shouldn't be that the entity that gets between a woman and her doctor. The woman should have the choice in this situation. And you hear just heartbreaking stories throughout the whole district of what's going on here. And with just, I mean, we even talk about the issues that lower abortion, and it's universal health care, it's raising the minimum wage, it's education, it's contraceptives, all of these things that I'm for. And what you've seen under this down in Des Moines from the Governor Reynolds and what Randy Feenster has passed, it's actually raised abortions in the state of Iowa.
Randy.
Yeah, my faith is the foundation of who I am. And, you know, my faith says that God has created each one of us for a purpose and a reason. And you think about that God has created, and the next person might, you know, create the cure to cancer, might be the next president, might be the next surgeon that does something very special. I'm 100% pro-life, and I'm extremely proud of it. And we did some great bills in the Iowa legislature that I'm also proud of passing the heartbeat bill. I believe that's, you know, life begins at conception. And I will advocate for that when I get to Congress.
Now, Randy, I'll stick with you on this next one. Over the summer, there have been a lot of protests, a lot of people advocating for the police to be less aggressive with people, to have different laws for the police, to have more civil rights for people. If you were in Congress, seems like some of these issues are going to come back after the election. What do you see as the responsibility of Congress to deal with these social justice and police issues?
Well, first of all, I just want to say that we have to unify. We are all Americans. You know, we are a blessed nation. We have the constitutional rights that guarantees us freedom and the right to assemble. But we don't have the right to loot and burn. That's not the American way. That doesn't affect change. You know, I strongly oppose the efforts to defund police. I support the men and women who stand on that thin blue line and put their lives on the line to protect our communities every day. Now, I look at what we did in the Iowa Senate. We passed a reform bill unanimously. 150 people all voted to ban chokeholds, to allow the Attorney General to investigate bad actors. We gave officers the ability for more training and to ensure that bad actors won't be rehired again. You know, these are all things that we can do, and I can only hope Congress does them. I know there was a bill, but obviously politics got in the way, and that didn't occur in Congress. So when I get there, I would love to work and get something done. But it goes back to my faith that we are all created for a purpose and a reason, and we are Americans, and we need to unite together.
J.D. Scholten, what do you think about that issue?
Yeah, you know what? I think one of the strengths of growing up here in Iowa is that we don't punch down, we lift each other up. And that's something my faith and my parents and my schooling has taught me. And so, you know, when it comes to police and policing right now, it's about showing up and listening. And that's what we've done. We've gone out and talked to so many people throughout the whole district and try to understand where they're coming from. And I think that's a huge part of this. Our campaign talks with people that will always vote for me and people who will never vote for me and everyone in between. And so we can understand where the different angles that are people coming from. But when it comes to policing right now, there's such a burden put on them. They're having to deal with mental health issues. They're having to deal with addiction issues. They're having to deal with poverty. And so I feel that a part of this issue is that we don't, as a society, haven't been there when it comes to social work and social workers and value that work as much as we should. And I think we should also talk about criminal justice reform a little bit. And one of the leaders nationally, we were blessed here in Sioux City to have an amazing judge, Judge Bennett, be a leader on this for the last couple of years, talking about ending mandatory minimums. And because a lot of times it's a drug addiction that has forced people to go down a wrong path. And that is something that I feel Sioux City has been better because of Judge Bennett.
And I would just like to ask, you know, each of you, maybe I'll start with you, JD. It must be kind of odd, you know, you're going around and you're meeting all these people in a district where you've had the same person representing this district, Steve King, I think, 18 years he was representing. What's it like to go out and sort of talk to people with all these different points of view? Because Ames is a lot different than Sioux City. Sioux City is different than Mason City.
Right. And I mean, my campaign last cycle went to all 39 counties at least three times, if not many more than that, a lot of them. And then last fall, we did the Don't Forget About Us tour, where we went into towns of under 1,000 people in all 39 counties and had a town hall and really heard from a lot of voices that don't necessarily get heard because they're in such small towns and congressional candidates don't go to there. And then we just finished the 374 town tour. So that's a huge part of what this job's about, is understanding the diversity of this district. And whether it's my dad coming from the very northwest part in Larchwood, or my mom coming from a farm outside the very northeast corner outside of Lake Mills, whether they met in Mason City when we were I was born in Ames when we were living in Nevada, or raising here in Sioux City. I know this fourth district. It's like the back of my hand. And especially having driven all 7,786 miles in Sioux City, Sioux. But it's you see a lot of reoccurring themes. And you understand, I understand a lot of why this district is the way they are politically. But you have to understand, too, that in the 80s, my two political heroes used to represent this district, Berkeley Bedell and Tom Harkin. And you know, what our campaign represents is really a throwback to them. It's being accessible. It's proving you're trustworthy and proving that you're going to fight for your constituents no matter who they voted for in the past. And that's why we've had several people in just the last week alone, when we've wrapped up the tour, who are King supporters who are supporting our campaign now. It's because we get out there and we engage and we don't say no to debates. We don't turn down forums. We go everywhere and are very accessible. And that's what our campaign's about.
Randy, you defeated Steve King in the primary. What's it been like for you campaigning around the 4th District?
Yeah, it's just been an amazing almost 2 years now, just listening to everyone in the 4th District. I mean, just in the last few days, being in Fort Dodge, talking to Main Street owners, talking to people in the research park, we're just in Iowa Falls, also talking to people on Main Street, talking to farmers, and everybody has thoughts and ideas. And it's exciting to hear of, hey, this is what we could do to make a difference. This could create more jobs. We need a little help here or there. It's just exciting to hear from all the different areas of the 39 counties. You know, I've traveled thousands of miles going through every area of this district. And I'm just so proud that, that we have this district that gets things done, that is proud agricultural community, a proud manufacturer community, and they want to show all the different innovations that they have done over the last decades and the things that are new cutting edge of innovation as we move forward. I'm excited that I have 600 Iowans that have endorsed me as county chairs in all 39 counties. I have 260 students from this same district that have endorsed me. I'm excited to work with them and create results for them and create and build a continued bright future for this 4th district.
You're listening to The Exchange. I'm Mary Hartnett, and we are listening to a taped forum with the 4th District congressional candidates, Republican Randy Feenstra and Democrat J.D. Schulten.
Yeah, I'll stick with you, Randy, for just a couple questions left. We have such a divisive presidential election going on right now. Does it worry you how that will affect the down ticket races, people going to vote? Do you think there's animosity that goes down the ticket, or do you think that, people are sort of saying, I'm going to make up my own mind about these individual races?
Well, the great thing about Iowa is that we don't have straight ticket voting, that people have to go down the ballot and check off each person that they want to vote for. And I think that's really special. I think that gives us each person that's on the ballot identity of saying, hey, I might be different than the person up or down the ballot. And I just look at what we have done also to secure our voting process in Iowa. We have now have it where you can get an absentee ballot, and all you have to do is get that ballot, and then you put in your driver's license or your PIN number, and it secures that ballot and making sure that it's you who is voting. And I just applaud what we've done in the Iowa legislature to make that all happen, both of those issues. And, I just look forward to November 3 and see how this plays out. For me, it's all about delivering results and making sure that I take my proven effective record and bring it to Congress and get things done for the people in 4th District and for Iowans.
You don't have like one party voting also, but also about making it easy to vote. JD, how do you think the voting system is right now? Do you agree that the state has made it easy for Iowans to vote?
Well, I mean, it used to be easier when we had a longer period, but that was shrunk a couple years ago. And so this is, we should have and encourage people to get involved in our democracy more and more. And that's something I would like to push, whether it's automatic voter registration or any way that we can make it easier on people to engage in our democracy. That's what we should do. When you look across Iowa, we had 30 years where in the Senate we had Grassley and Harkin. And so we used to vote on the person and not the party. And, one of the biggest things that I was proud of last cycle, we outperformed the top of the ticket by 17% in this district. And we got 25,000 more votes than there are even Democrats in this district. And it's because we got out there and we engaged with people and we built relationships all throughout the district and all over the political spectrum. And I feel that is what's missing in modern politics. Just staying at home and campaigning and blasting the other side, at the end of the day, that doesn't improve people's lives. And what we should do is get out there and listen. And I like to think that our campaign's been a model for the way we should campaign in politics these days.
Randy, I'd like to just ask you finally to kind of wrap it up and talk about really why you feel like you're the best person for this 4th district job.
Well, by the way, thank you for having this forum tonight. I greatly appreciate it. I am running for Congress because the 4th district needs a proven, effective conservative voice that will deliver. To me, this election is about real results, and it's not about campaign rhetoric. I served in the Iowa Senate for 12 years, being an assistant majority leader. I helped deliver results for Iowa families and businesses and the agricultural community. I authored and helped pass the largest income tax reduction in state history. I worked to provide assistance for first-time farmers, eliminated the grain bin tax, and passed health care plans tailored for rural Iowa. I also helped reduce regulations, and I oppose liberal schemes like the Green New Deal and a government takeover of healthcare that would hurt our families and our businesses. They'd bust our budgets and reduce rural healthcare access. In Congress, I'll continue to deliver for our families, for Main Street businesses, and for farm producers. I'll work on the Ag Committee to deliver results for our farming community. I'll work on tax reforms that build on the Trump tax cuts, further simplifying our tax code and reducing the burden on our families, our farmers, and our job creators. Most of all, I will work every day to deliver real results for the 4th District. This isn't campaign promises or rhetoric. These are actual conservative results that I've been proud to deliver in Iowa, and I will do the same in Congress. Again, Mary, thank you so much for this opportunity. And I humbly ask for each person listening, I ask for your vote on November 3rd.
Thank you, Randy. And JD.
Yeah, thank you, Mary, so much for having me. And I think I made a point earlier to say that I was going to get back to enforcing our antitrust laws. And so, you know, this is something that's near and dear to my heart. My grandmother's my biggest inspiration. And in 2016 at Thanksgiving, she told me, you got to take care of the farm. And shortly after that, she passed away. And so that was the moment that kind of snowballed into running for Congress, or that started the snowball. And so as I look across this district and talk to so many people across the district, this is one thing, again, to farmers who will always vote for me and farmers who will never vote for me can completely, and everyone in between can completely agree that we have multinational corporations acting as monopolies, squeezing our farmers out. And nowhere is that more clear than one of the most meaningful stops that we had on our 374 town tour was in just south of Emmitsburg in Palo Alto County. And we met with Roger Walker. Him and his brother are the last dairy farmers in Palo Alto County, one of the most heartbreaking stories. And the reason they're being driven off is not because of the market, it's because of policies out in DC. When we have a Secretary of Agriculture who talks about in America, the big get bigger and the small get out, it doesn't have to be. You could be thousands of acres or hundreds of acres or thousands of acres. You should have a chance to succeed. And that's what our campaign's about. It's about, we got to elect new people because these career politicians are selling out the American farmer, the American worker, and the American consumer. And the status quo is hurting this district. I mean, that's why my campaign doesn't take any corporate PAC money. And so much of what we are is trying to just be something different. People are so sick of politics these days, and we're trying to give it a healthy alternative.
And you've been listening to a forum on the exchange with 4th District Congressional candidates, Republican State Senator Randy Feenster of Hull and Democrat J.D. Shulton of Sioux City. And that forum was recorded earlier this week. And that's it for this edition of the exchange. Thanks so much for listening. I'm Mary Hartnett.